only adding the +10 to all attributes and a little bit of wisdom. However, he noticed how similar its distribution was to the fragment of the coffin. The weight of attributes was almost identical, with just the focus on endurance and vitality being switched. Getting the fragment of the Bodhi, rather than something like the grove or the forest, was a bit unexpected, but perhaps not as much as getting the coffin. Zack had read up on Buddhism a bit since learning that it was an actual cultivation system in the multiverse, so he knew a little bit of what the word represented. The Bodhi was a divine tree that the Buddha gained enlightenment under, and the word was the term for true enlightenment, the escape from the cycle of reincarnation. The only issue was that such a Tao sounded related to Buddhism, and he wasn't sure how good a fit that would be to his current cultivation path. Agras had joked about him embarking on the path of ascetic cultivation like a monk, but he wasn't ready to take a vow of silence just yet. But his instincts told him that it wouldn't be an issue. The name of a Tao fragment wasn't important. What mattered were the concepts the fragment contained. The main focus of the vision hadn't been the Buddhist praying, but rather how the cherry tree had changed after the blessing. It had turned into a divine tree that became the guardian of the desolate Badlands. It didn't only provide the whole area with vitality, but it also empowered everything within its domain. Normal weeds and grasses had become full of life and power, quickly growing far stronger than they would be able to on their own. From what Zack could tell, the healing he had enjoyed was just part of the picture. The fragment might have a huge impact on his Hatchet Man class, as many of its skills were related to nature. What would happen if he turned the wooden hand of nature's punishment into a divine hand? Getting the third fragment early was a huge relief to Zack, and it took a lot of pressure off. It was a shame that it came at the cost of the soul-mending medicine, but now that he had passed the seventh floor, he should have a stronger position for bargaining when he exited. Perhaps he could buy another one from some powerful clan who wanted to make a connection with him. It also meant that the chance of gaining something from the tower apparition was a lot higher, since he now could upgrade any of his three fragments. Ideally, he wanted to upgrade the fragment of the axe, but it wasn't completely necessary at this point. Any of the three would allow him to gain an arcane class, as long as the system considered his new path to be unique enough to be called a creation. He couldn't wait to experiment some with his new fragment during his ascent of the eighth floor. He had finally managed to use the bronze flash for something useful just now, and it had been shockingly effective. It felt like confirmation that he was on the right path, and he needed to capture the moment of inspiration and expand it to his new fragment as well. Of course, getting the final Tao fragment wasn't the only surprising gain from the seventh floor. He had not only upgraded his tower title, but he had actually gained another one. The first one in a good while. He had assumed that he wouldn't get any more titles before evolving, unless he got something from his massive pool of luck, but it appeared he had underestimated himself. Tower of Eternity, 7th floor. Reach the 64th level of the Tower of Eternity. Reward: all stats +10. All stats +10%. Effective attributes +5%. Heaven's Triumvirate. Attain 3 Tao fragments while still at F grade. Reward: all stats +5%. All stats +5. Effective attributes +5%. The tower title had upgraded, but not quite as expected. Instead of boosting his 3 main attributes, it had directly provided 5% efficiency to all attributes. That meant one would probably get the perfect 10x10x10 from completing the 8th floor. But then what would happen on the 9th? Did it provide a separate title? The guy earlier had mentioned Tower Breakers, and from context, it sounded like someone who would be able to defeat the whole Tower of Eternity. Was Tower Breaker perhaps the name of not only the achievement, but an actual title? Zack unfortunately knew that the 9th floor was out of his reach, unless the rules drastically changed on the final floor. The progression of strength had been pretty even during the climb, and he knew that he would start entering true life-and-death battles on the 8th floor. Even defeating the Guardian wasn't a given, and he had already decided to start looking for clues to amazing inheritances as a backup. Time was a precious resource, so Zack held off on choosing a reward a while longer and instead sat down to recuperate while he was in this special zone. Getting chased down by Iz Tain had only worsened his wounds from the battle with Faceless Number 9, and he needed to give himself and his poor shield some time to rest up. Everlasting almost looked like a melted clump of metal, but it was truly a tenacious item, and it was slowly regaining its original shape. Just like his body, it would probably be in serviceable condition within a few hours. However, the situation with his soul wasn't as easy to fix. The verdant glow had completely disappeared by now, leaving his soul whole. But his soul had inexorably changed after the experience. It was now crisscrossed by black lines where the fractures once were, reminiscent of a kintsugi bowl. There were also some splotches here and there, marring the picture even further. He had already felt the effect during the battle earlier, where bloodlust had coursed through his body, almost to the point that he was ready to run straight into a sun. Zack was afraid that the effect would only become worse as the corruption grew. The energies might even start damaging the miasmic runes from the outside. He quickly needed to find a solution. Chapter 30. The Hainer Clan. The mental defense skills available to either of his classes were of no help against the Splinter. For example, Indomitable formed a formidable wall around Zack's soul, but it didn't help when the threat was already a part of him. The 9 Reincarnations manual might help, but he still hadn't found anyone who could create the second array disc required to practice it. Having just one of the arrays was useless, and he couldn't even begin to practice the first reincarnation. The fragment of the Bodhi did seem to be able to stabilize the situation somewhat, at least, just like his seed of trees had constrained the Draugr bloodline that had been implanted in him. It was a losing battle, though, and it was probably only a matter of time before something went wrong. The only solution that Zack could think of for the moment was to keep the energies in check as best he could, and hopefully he'd find something to use during the last day that had been allocated for the base town. Or perhaps he was worrying over nothing, and his soul would slowly grind down the infected parts since the main body of the Splinter was still locked away in its cage. 30 minutes quickly passed as Zack almost went into a trance-like state where he tried using his new fragment to the utmost while absorbing E-grade miasma crystals and healing pills. Some fresh hell was no doubt waiting outside his special zone, and he needed to be at his best. He was still far from top condition, but it should be enough for him to survive the initial chaos and properly rest somewhere else. He would rather have stayed inside the Black Dimension for a few more hours, but the whole zone had started to shudder, indicating that it was time to leave. The problem was what reward to choose, as all of them were extremely tempting. He knew that the evolution of the weapon wasn't something as simple as an upgrade from middle to peak E-grade, but it was rather more akin to a bloodline evolution of a beast. It might provide Varun with a matching attunement to his own, or swap out the materials with ones of far higher quality. The somewhat humble origins of his axe hadn't been a problem so far, but it would sooner or later start to fall behind, or even get stuck in a bottleneck. It needed fortuitous encounters just like himself, and this was a great opportunity to improve his companion to something with greater potential. It would probably also help during the final remainder of the climb, and he would need every advantage he could get. As for the specialty core upgrade, it spoke for itself. He already had the Pathfinder Oracle Eye in his possession, so it was not completely needed in his case. But the eye was an amazing treasure that could be used for almost anything, it seemed, and upgrading his core this way would free up the treasure for other uses. As for upgrading Port Atwood to a world capital, Sack wasn't as clear what it would entail. It would no doubt come with a slew of advantages to his force in general, and it would probably also give him some sort of title for being the one who founded the capital after integration. It would provide access to all kinds of new businesses and other beneficial buildings as well, since it was a common requirement in the town shop to have the world capital. Indecision gnawed at him for a minute, but he knew he couldn't stall forever. His eyes eventually went to the middle option, and he picked the duplicity core upgrade. His reason was simple. His core was a unique mutation, and there were no guarantees the eye would be able to upgrade it even if he ate it after evolving. Meanwhile, the system termed it as an upgrade, and there shouldn't be any chance of the upgrade failing. Evolving Varun would have been nice as well, but Varun was ultimately a pretty common spirit tool, and finding other opportunities to improve it shouldn't prove impossible. Even his Pathfinder eye could upgrade the spirit tool if need be. Besides, Varun was still keeping up at his current power without a problem, especially after he had managed to light up another fractal on its handle. He would probably need to reach level 100 or so before the axe started to fall behind. As for the world capital, he had great confidence in accomplishing that on his own, provided that he didn't get himself killed first. Taking that option would ultimately only speed up the process, and he felt it wasn't worth it. It would perhaps have given him a better title for getting the world capital while still in F grade, but he wasn't lacking for titles. The choice was made, so Zack waited to be teleported to the start of the 8th floor. But nothing happened for a few seconds until a startling change took place in the empty space. A densely inscribed circle appeared beneath his feet, and it illuminated him in a golden luster. A volatile surge of energy entered his body the next moment, and Zack had to force himself to stay still instead of rolling around in pain. The colossal amount of power streamed straight toward his core, and he didn't dare make a move for fear that he would ruin what was happening. Who would have known that the system would force an upgrade immediately rather than hand him some pill? The pain, thankfully, only lasted for less than a minute, and Zack could only guess it wasn't a big deal for the system to upgrade a simple F-grade specialty core, even if it was a mutated version. Zack wanted to inspect the upgraded specialty core, but the surroundings changed as he was teleported to the next world. The massive bulwark from Immutable Bulwark was conjured within a second of arriving as he hefted the somewhat restored Everlasting, and Indomitable defended his mind from taking another hit. The cherry had worked wonders, but he guessed the soul was still a bit vulnerable after having almost crumbled to pieces. It was lucky as well, as a massive blade slammed straight into his shield just as Zack appeared in the new world. A pained roar followed as Deathwish retaliated the strike, but even then he didn't get any respite as his danger sense hollered in the back of his mind, forcing him to jump to the side as the air itself where he stood was ripped open. Seize the Hainer clan's defining treasure before the invaders. Zack sighed in disappointment, even though he saw the quest was related to a defining treasure. He had been down this road before during the past floors, and he knew things weren't so simple. First of all, he was thrown onto some desolate beach without any civilization nearby, and he had no idea where this Hainer clan was located. But that was just the start of his problems. Right behind him was a massive pillar that stretched into the sky, and one warrior after another appeared around him. The soldiers were beset with attacks from a defending force that didn't ask any questions, but rather tried to kill anyone that appeared. The situation was all too familiar to him. It was an incursion. However, the chaos was still a bit different from the one he was used to. It looked like he had arrived just minutes after the pillar appeared, yet an army full of peak F-grade to powerful E-grade warriors was already fighting back with great ferocity. The attacks he had just avoided came from the defenders, who looked like a mix of humans and trolls. They stood almost 3 meters tall and had pale green skin. They seemed to favor physical combat as well, and even the strike he'd barely dodged had come from an explosive arrow attack. Zack could understand the words the humans screaming out of the pillar screamed, but the defenders spoke in an unintelligible guttural gibberish. How would he find out where the Hainer clan was? And who was the guardian in a scenario like this? He seemed to be allied with the raiders, but also not, judging by the wording of the quest. He could liken it to being an infiltrator who had joined the incursion with hidden motives, so everyone was an enemy. Was the incursion leader the guardian? Or was it perhaps the patriarch of the Hainer clan? As for actually finding the treasure, he had already given up on it. He knew that even if he found the clan, there would be all sorts of hurdles to jump in order to get the treasure, hurdles he didn't have the time nor the skills to deal with. Eventually, he could only find one solution to his situation, and Zack searched the area until he spotted a human radiating a sinister aura as he commanded his troops to take down the defending armies. Zack steadied himself as he activated Profane Seal, appearing in front of the man without warning. The man looked extremely shocked to be attacked by one of his own, but he immediately reacted as a huge bird made from hundreds of flying daggers appeared in front of him as he flashed away. However, the cage was already erected, and Zack steadily grew to his towering form as miasma covered the area. The flying daggers assailed him like an angry swarm of bees, and Zack was quickly forced to actively block with immutable bulwark, as he noted that the daggers were infused with a Tao fragment and could cut straight through his miasmic armor. The fractal shield thankfully held, though, and Zack saw Tao-empowered specters appear around the incursion general in an instant. However, most of the specter's strikes were diffused with some sort of small shields that appeared around the leader, with only a few of them managing to land an actual blow on him. Zack knew he had taken the strength of the potential guardian too lightly at that moment. He hadn't mentally adjusted due to the increased difficulty, because he hadn't fought a real floor guardian at the end of the 7th floor, but rather a bunch of cultivators. It made him still think of his competition as roughly the same as the 62nd level, forgetting about the sharp increase that came with the final levels of a floor. The man was also an incursion general, which Zack had ample experience in defeating without exerting any Herculean effort. It had made him confident in deflecting the small blades with his impervious armor, but he received a rude awakening as over 10 daggers bored into his body and reopened some wounds. If that was all that happened, it would have been fine, as such small weapons weren't any threat to Zack's towering physique. But a blistering pain started to radiate from the wounds in an instant, and Zack felt the world lurch for a second before he found his bearings. He realized what was going on in an instant. The daggers were poisoned. Luckily, both the spread and impact was largely contained the moment he activated the fragment of the coffin. But it was nothing like when he'd fought the corroded monkeys back on the 3rd floor. The coffin didn't make him magically immune to all poisons, it only strengthened his resistance to it and allowed him to refine it. This poison he was struck with was on a completely other level compared to what he had absorbed before, and it seemed to also be empowered by a Tao of its own. It wasn't life-threatening, as far as Zack could tell, especially with his Draugr body's natural resistance against poisons as well. But it would still take some effort to refine it all.
"You're not one of ours,"
the man roared from the other side of the cage, a large festering wound having appeared on his arm. Zack didn't answer as he was focused on combating the poison spreading through his body, while simultaneously making sure that he wasn't cut by any more of those small daggers. He noted that a concerted effort to break through from the leader's soldiers was already underway, and he knew his time was limited. He quickly pushed his taunting effect to the limit as he rushed toward his target, with 10 of the 15 chains targeting the general. The other 5 started to take out the people who had been caught inside the cage along with their leader, and these people quickly turned into nourishment for him. The incursion leader managed to stave off the chains, though, by allocating a large number of his flying daggers to fight them off. A poison master was a decent counter to his build, since intangible attacks like poison or illusions wouldn't trigger Deathwish. But that didn't mean Zack was helpless. He could still retaliate if the man used daggers rather than pure poison attacks like Alea, and he also had his massive barditch to strike back. The ground cracked beneath his feet as Zack ran straight toward the incursion leader, but the man seemed intent on stalling as he was swallowed by a hurricane of blades before he was whisked away. Unfortunately for the man, he hadn't realized he was under the effect of Vanguard of Undeath, and the general suddenly appeared only 5 meters away from Zack. Zack's arm was already bulging from cramming it full of miasmic energy from unholy strike, and the sounds of ghastly wails filled the cage as the massive black axe crashed into the whirlwind just when the general appeared. The axe went straight through the general's torso, but Zack felt no elation, as the swing provided no resistance, and it looked like he had struck a pile of mud as the invader's body fell apart into a rotten pile on the ground. The general had escaped his killing blow. Chapter 31. Fated. Danger sense erupted in Zack's mind the next moment, and he desperately swiveled Everlasting to block a strike coming from behind. A dark green lance had appeared out of nowhere, aimed straight at Zack's core. Zack tried to dodge, but his bulky body wasn't quick enough, and he barely managed to reposition himself before the lance slid right through his armor as though it were made of paper before continuing into his side. Radiating pain spread throughout his body, and Zack felt like he was being bitten by a million fire ants. But the lance pushing straight through his body had one upside. The incursion leader was suddenly well within his range. The man was pretty quick, but he was nowhere near as fast as the assassin he had just fought. Zack let go of his shield as he grabbed onto the poison master before he could slink away again. His grip covered half the invader's torso, and there was no escaping now. The warrior seemed to realize the problem, and a green blade appeared in his hand as he tried to cut Zack's arm off with one swift motion. A black shield appeared around Zack's arm as he hurriedly threw out a talisman from his spatial ring. It was something he had gotten from the undead level, a defensive treasure that could be used almost instantly. It wasn't strong enough to completely block the strike, but it absorbed enough momentum for the fragment of the coffin, along with his conjured armor, to block out the rest. Wet, crunching sounds emerged from the poison master's body as Zack's grip closed like a vice. The man started wailing in pain as he desperately tried to morph away, but Zack was flooding the guy with his corrosive Tao, making it impossible to change his form. However, the man seemed completely unwilling to give in, even when half his torso was crushed, and a storm of daggers rushed toward them both in an attempt at mutual destruction. Zack was forced to quickly cut the man in two to finally sense a burst of energy enter his body as the flying daggers lost their power and fell down on the ground. The invasion leader had almost been as durable as himself, launching destructive strikes, even though half his body was crippled. Perhaps he was just like Alea, forced to focus on vitality to counteract the effects of the poisons he used. Zack felt as though both his body and mind were on fire from the poison, but he still released the cage of profane seal. The fighting between both sides had mostly subsided, and they gapingly looked on as the massive form of Zack walked forward, holding the crushed incursion leader like a rag doll in his almost grotesquely large hand.
"This invasion is over. Return or die,"
Zack said to the humans, his gravelly voice sending shivers down the spines of the listeners. Seeing most of the humans flee toward the incursion pillar, Zack turned to the massive trolls. They hesitantly looked back at Zack, probably unsure whether he was an ally or just a bloodthirsty lunatic.
"Do you understand my words now?"
Zack simply asked as he forcibly tried to quell the storm raging in his mind.
"We understand, War Master,"
one of the trolls said as he stepped forward.
"Why did you help us?"
"I am following a prophecy that took me to your world. I am looking for the Haner clan,"
Zack said. Following a prophecy was an excuse that Agras had used multiple times when searching for information upon arriving at new levels. It didn't really explain why they were there, and neither did it divulge whether you were an ally or a foe. Furthermore, a lot of people read into it whatever fit their point of view, which made them accidentally divulge some extra information.
"The Haner clan,"
the troll mumbled with a frown.
"Are they the cause of this cataclysm?" "They have something in their possession that should not exist on this planet,"
Zack said, neither confirming nor denying the troll's question.
"So it is them,"
the troll growled.
"Delving into the taboo, they pretended to be our saviors, bringing words of warning, but they were actually the harbingers of our doom."
It turned out that the Haner clan was an ancient clan full of sages who delved into the mysteries of the heavens. They had warned the forces of this world that a great war was coming, that invaders would come to disrupt their way of life. It had allowed the forces to ready themselves for war, but it had also inadvertently helped Zack gain an excuse for why he was looking for them. However, a frown quickly formed beneath Zack's helmet while listening, as it quickly became apparent that the family focused on the Tao of Karma, just like Abbot Everlasting Peace. Fighting those kinds of people was notoriously annoying, since they were often able to anticipate your next move. Did the Haner clan already know they were targeted by him? Perhaps they had even gone underground the moment he arrived, which would make Zack's mission even harder to complete. He had already confirmed that the incursion leader wasn't the guardian of the level. No teleportation array had appeared when he killed the Poison Master, and he was pretty sure by now that he would have to actually find the Haner clan to advance to the next floor. After asking about the general state of the world and getting a decent map of the area, Zack left the trolls to deal with the aftermath of the incursion. However, Zack only ran for 20 minutes before he stopped and took out another healing treasure, along with some general antidote pills. With the number of pills he had eaten over the last hour, the effect was drastically reduced, but he needed to do something about the poison rampaging through his body. It had been a struggle just to stand upright and talk with the trolls. They were very congenial after he had killed the incursion leader, even calling him War Master. But that friendliness might have taken a sharp turn if they found out he was in an extremely wounded state. Dealing with poison was his strong suit, but the wounds had stacked up to an almost unmanageable state by now. He knew he was running out of time to reach the top of the 8th floor, but he still needed to take a moment to rest. At least the last level had finished extremely quickly, which saved him a few hours, even though the final levels of each floor usually were pretty quick to deal with. It wouldn't be the end of the world if he spent a couple of hours healing up from the aftermath. Taking the opportunity of the downtime, Zack first looked inward, checking out his new and improved specialty core. Its size and coloring were pretty much the same, but the density of fractals covering its surface was on a whole new level. The inscriptions were so fine that he couldn't discern them all with his spiritual vision. There was also an indefinable upgrade in the quality of the duplicity core. It almost felt like it had been a cheap plastic ball before, but it was now upgraded to solid metal. The quality and composition were essentially improved. However, Zack quickly started to feel some confusion as he tried to understand the changes the upgrade had brought. The reason was simple. There were none. The line in his status screen had been updated to say E-duplicity, but that was about it. It didn't provide any more attributes, and there was nothing else that seemed to have changed. It was a pretty big disappointment, as it currently awarded 5% strength and 5% endurance, based on the two main attributes of his classes. Zack thought that those boosts might increase from the upgrade, which was another reason he'd opted to take the specialty core upgrade as an award. If his boost went from 5% to 10%, then his strength would have passed 1,000 by now. But it seemed like that wasn't meant to be. However, it wasn't a complete loss. He had only seen those things as a bonus if he got them. The main point was that he would be able to evolve his two classes without having to worry whether his specialty core would be able to keep up. Besides, Ariel seemed to indicate that the speed of his transformation should improve as the core evolved. He didn't dare to try it out right now, as he was both poisoned and wounded, and his Draugr form was better at enduring such a state. Not gaining any boosts to his strength was disappointing, but he had gotten his hands on another peak attribute fruit, which would allow him to almost reach his goal. As long as a medium fragment increased the boost to all attributes, he would breach 1,000 strength no matter which of the three fragments he managed to upgrade from the tower apparition. As for whether he would manage to upgrade his Tao from the apparition, he felt it almost was a given by now. He had reached the 8th floor, something that only happened once every few millennia. The strength of the apparition he would summon should be on a completely different tier compared to those he had witnessed before, and the effect was reportedly boosted significantly when you were the one who conjured it. After having rested up for another hour, he felt strong enough that he didn't need to solely focus on recuperation. Most of the poison had already been converted to energy, with just a few Tao-empowered remnants lingering on. Those remnants would take a while longer to grind down, but they weren't a threat to him at all. Seeing the situation stabilize, he first took out the peak attribute fruit and ate it. A warmth spread through his body, and he quickly checked the status screen for the result. A quick mental calculation let him know that he had gained 8 to all attributes, which would have to be considered a pretty good result. However, his strength had only gained 7 points, pushing his total to 992. It was only 1 point less than the other attributes, but it proved a somewhat disappointing fact. He had hit the cap for how much strength he could gain by eating treasures. Adding the fruits from the hunt, he had gained a total of 25 points in strength before he hit the limit. An attribute limit of 25 was as good as it got in the F grade, as far as Zack could tell, where most people were only able to gain 15 to 20 points from attribute fruits. However, he had held out some unspoken hope that his odd constitution would also apply to this situation, where his limits were a lot higher compared to normal. But it looked like his body had to follow the same rules as everyone else. But there was not only bad news waiting after he looked through his status screen. His luck had shot up to 257, and it had provided a title just like he had hoped. Fated. Gain 250 luck at F grade. Reward. Effect of luck. +5%. It wasn't anything special, truthfully, but Zack guessed it was fair enough. His luck was so high from having gained so many titles. And if the system kept giving titles for those kinds of accomplishments, it would essentially mean he was getting rewarded for getting rewarded. Besides, even if the boost was pretty small, it was still a high-tiered title that boosted luck. Such a thing was extremely hard to come by. Zack closed the screen and turned his attention to the two cosmos sacks and the spatial ring he had gained during the last level. A smile of anticipation spread across his face as he scanned the contents of the first pouch, wondering what kind of treasures the elites of the multiverse would carry around. A blank look of confusion spread across his face, though, as he first scanned the swordsman's sack. Zack couldn't figure out what was going on. He would have expected a cosmos sack from someone like that to be filled to the brim with all kinds of mysterious items, but there was even less inside than his own cosmos sack. The first thing he noticed was one of the golden swords. It was one of the three that the lanky humanoid had controlled with his mind and that had kept harassing him throughout the fight. But he couldn't find the other three swords he'd used even after scanning the contents multiple times. Had the system simply snatched a part of the loser's treasures at random as they left the tower? Because that was what it looked like after going through the contents. He did, however, spot the old sword in its tattered scabbard. It was something that had piqued Zack's interest due to its dangerous aura, and Zack curiously took it out from the sack. Upon looking at it from such close proximity, it felt like the sword was something that had been left to rot in some storehouse for millennia before being picked up. The leather scabbard was extremely faded and dried out, and it looked like a strong wind would turn it to dust. However, his mind started to scream of danger the moment he gripped the hilt, and a furious presence suddenly urged him to draw the sword and paint the world red. Zack groaned and quickly threw the sword to the ground, but it took him over 10 minutes to regain his composure. The presence had awakened the splinter of oblivion inside its cage, and it furiously railed against the miasmic fractals. It felt like when he had been possessed by the cursed ghosts during the hunt, as violent impulses had tried to take over his mind. Zack looked at the old sword with some lingering fear, unsure what he was dealing with. Was it a tool spirit that had gone insane? Chapter 32. Nouveau Riche. Brasla had only turned a bit schizophrenic and annoying over time, but he wasn't strictly dangerous. However, it was possible that some tool spirits turned sinister as they went insane. Zack knew there had to be some benefit to the sword, though, as the swordsman had used it as an ace. The half-moon attack had contained a shocking sharpness that cut both his mountain and array apart. Was it perhaps only possible to conjure such an attack with this sword? Zack was loath to carry the weird sword around, and he tried putting it back into the cosmos sack again, but the sword refused to enter the pouch, and Zack soon realized the sacks left behind were temporary pouches, just like the one he'd gotten from the hunt. He threw the sword into his own sack instead as he turned to the next items in the pouch. The bag contained an assortment of pills, along with a small mound of crystals and a couple of manuals. However, Zack refrained from touching those, afraid they would be protected like Mal's manual was. They possibly contained skills and cultivation techniques whose quality was unrivaled in his sector, and such things would no doubt come with high-grade theft protection. The bag from the masked man was a lot more ominous. It contained over 100 heads from a dozen different races, each of them placed in their own densely inscribed boxes. Their eyes were sewn shut, and a talisman was pushed halfway into their mouths. Why the hell was this man carrying around something like this? It didn't seem to be part of his class, since he never used any heads to fight. Was this some sort of morbid way to create talismans? And if Zack only got part of their accumulated treasures, just how many heads had Faceless Number 9 been carrying around in total? Apart from that, there were a bunch of vials and assorted treasures, including 5 identical spikes that the assassin had stabbed himself with during their fight. Zack hesitated for a second before he transferred 2 of them to his own spatial ring. He wasn't sure exactly what these things were, but they'd allowed the assassin to fight beyond his normal capabilities. The spikes probably had even worse side effects than his hatchet man's rage, but he might be forced to go all out upon exiting the tower in a few days. Just like with the swordsman's pouch, there was another pile full of an assortment of items in one corner, likely things the assassin had picked up inside the tower. However, after seeing the heads, he was in no mood to look too closely at what had captured the interest of such a lunatic. Finally, there was the spatial ring belonging to the mentalist, the spatial tool that Zack felt held the most promise. The two sacks had been dropped off by the system, but this was the real deal that was taken from her person, and he only needed a glance to realize he had hit the jackpot. It looked just like what he expected a wealthy Scion's Cosmos sack to look like. First of all, the space inside the ring was well over 10 times the size of Rasulil's spatial tool. The dimensions were also extremely clearly defined compared to the somewhat hazy borders of his own ring. According to Galau, that was a sign of high-quality craftsmanship and proof that its space would stay stable for a long time. Cosmos sacks only stayed functional for a decade or two before they needed to be swapped out, and Rasulil's ring was probably an old hand-me-down from the looks of it. But the ring he had just gotten his hands on was no doubt recently produced, and it would hold together for thousands of years before its subspace deteriorated. Seeing the amazing spatial ring raised another question in Zack's mind. Were these items protected from the general rules of the tower, or did he risk losing them as well? Seeing as they were the personal items of trial takers, Zack leaned toward the former, but he guessed he would have to exit the tower to make sure. His first instinct was to swap out his subpar ring, but that might cause him to lose all his possessions. Perhaps he should use as many items as possible before leaving the tower, just in case. But he knew that using up the contents of the spatial ring would be nigh impossible. There were at least 10,000 E-grade Nexus crystals neatly stacked in one corner. However, they were somewhat different from his own, as they all seemed to be covered in some sort of engravings. Zack took out one of them, and he was surprised to see that it didn't leak a smidgen of energy. He hesitated for a few seconds longer, but he eventually tried to absorb the energy. It was extremely uncomfortable to absorb energy from a Nexus crystal in his Draugr form, and it felt akin to drinking tainted water to part your thirst. Cascading waves of nausea hit him, but he only needed to continue the absorption for a few seconds to confirm his hunch. The energies inside the crystal were actually released at twice the rate compared to a normal one, as the inscription formed some sort of energy transfer array, akin to his mother-daughter array that had been put into the merit exchange long ago. It was a pretty luxuriant method, since it was used on simple, unattuned crystals, and the cost of the craftsmanship was no doubt far beyond the value of the crystals themselves. The inscribed Nexus crystals weren't the only types of crystals in the ring. Another far smaller pile of crystals sat next to the mountain of Nexus crystals, each of them looking like a block of ice. Zack had never seen such a resource previously, and took one out to get a better look. The crystal was cool to the touch, and mysterious emanations spread from it, and Zack immediately felt a reaction as he held it in his hand. The reaction didn't come from his body, though, like when he was near a great natural treasure, but it rather was a prickling sensation from his soul. Zack had a pretty good guess what it was after remembering just who had been the owner of the sack, and he could quickly confirm it was some sort of soul crystal. The crystals didn't seem to be attuned, but instead something that contained mental energy. He had never heard of anything like it before, and it had never been on display in any of the shops in the base town. A soothing sensation entered his mind the moment he started absorbing it, and he felt his drained soul rapidly regain its vigor. This would be a great asset in speeding up his climb. Better yet, if these things worked like Nexus crystals, he might even be able to use them to strengthen his mind. If direct absorption didn't work, he might still be able to use them together with his soul-strengthening manual. It was also a huge relief to see that there seemed to be no response from the pieces from the Splinter of Oblivion swimming about, meaning that he could use the soul crystals without worry that he was harming himself. He didn't want another cosmic water situation on his hands, after all. Apart from the soul crystals, there were a plethora of dresses, all of which sported dense sets of inscriptions. It looked like the mentalist actually had a full wardrobe of defensive treasures, and if Zack wasn't wrong, then all of them seemed to be spirit tools. There were also dozens of rings, earrings, necklaces, and bracelets, each a defensive treasure that looked more powerful than anything he'd seen in the base town. He doubted that the rules wherever the mentalist came from differed. These items had to be low E-grade treasures at most to be taken into the Tower of Eternity. However, there was undeniably a difference in quality among items of similar grade. These things probably only used the energy of a low E-grade treasure, but what they could accomplish with that amount of energy far surpassed what Zekia craftsmen could accomplish. Using expensive treasures as though they were normal clothes was another level of wealth that Zack hadn't encountered before. Almost everyone he knew pretty much wore the same getup every day after getting graded clothing. It was the same with himself. The white robes he got from Eriel were the strongest defensive wear he had, and they possessed self-repairing and self-cleaning features. Wearing other clothes seemed silly by this point. There was also a large number of pills, raw materials, and natural treasures that seemed valuable enough to make him doubt his eyes. There were also a few soul-mending treasures, but Zack wasn't too sure whether they would be strong enough to replace the cherry in regard to helping Alea. Their energy fluctuations were a lot stronger than equivalent pills in his own possession, but they were far weaker compared to the cherry he had eaten. There were also a bunch of things Zack couldn't understand, such as a large metallic head, what looked like a massive drum that had a diameter of over 5 meters, and all kinds of odd trinkets. Perhaps they were specialized tools that could assist in specific tasks, but Zack didn't have time to go through them one by one. He did, however, spot something he recognized. There was a large leaf with 10 luxuriant prayer mats placed on top. Zack was perhaps way off base with his speculations, but he was pretty sure he was looking at a flying treasure, one of much higher quality than the one he'd lent his sister. It seemed to have been crafted from a natural treasure, with both natural and inscribed fractals combining into an extremely exquisite pattern. It was a shame that flying treasures were disabled in the Tower of Eternity. Perhaps the system considered having one to be too large an advantage and restricted them completely. It would have saved Zack a huge amount of time if he could have used one, as he spent days just traveling on each floor. Finally, there was the pile of random items that seemed to be just flung into a corner of its own, no doubt the things she had found during her climb. Zack wryly smiled as he looked at the treasure trove, and he almost forgave the woman for destroying his soul. Zack hesitated for a few seconds on how to deal with the 3 spatial tools before he poured out all their contents one by one. He had no inspection skills and no knowledge worth mentioning in appraisal, but there were some ways to tell what was good and what was not. Every time he had encountered a beneficial natural treasure, he had been able to feel his whole body itching as it craved the energies the item contained. It was the same with Verun's bite as well. Zack eventually found 6 treasures that elicited such a response in his body. He also discovered 4 items that Verun seemed interested in. 2 slabs of metal, a piece of bone that was almost pink, and an odd rock. However, the axe was only able to absorb the rock, while it could only roar in anger at the other 3 items. Perhaps they were materials that could assist in upgrading the quality of the axe, but reforging a spirit tool probably required the assistance of a skilled blacksmith or inscriptionist. Soon enough, everything in the 2 cosmos sacks was transferred to his own spare cosmos sacks, at which point they dissipated into motes of light. The high-quality spatial ring stayed behind, even though Zack had emptied it of all its contents. Zack was pretty sure that it was a permanent item, but he wouldn't risk the vast wealth inside on a hunch. He also stowed away the natural treasures that elicited such a strong reaction in his body, albeit not without some reluctance. He would put Kalryn on figuring out what to do with these items. The Sky Gnomes seemed to be thieves as much as merchants, and they probably knew what hidden dangers there were to owning loot like this. He didn't want to add a bunch of B-grade forces to the list of Earth's enemies due to ignorance. Having dealt with the treasures, he sat down and redoubled his efforts on restoring his body, this time with the additional support of soul crystals. Zack set out 5 hours later, which was a lot better than what he expected, going by the state his body had been in. The combination of the fragment of the Bodhi and his newly acquired soul crystals helped supercharge his recovery, building on his already shockingly high vitality. Since he was pretty much healed up, he swapped over to his human form in order to move quicker. Unfortunately, things didn't go quite as smoothly for the rest of the level as in the beginning. It quickly became apparent that the Hainer clan was very aware of his existence, as they had disseminated the news that a dangerous, solitary invader threatened their whole world. Zack had been beset by everything from righteous citizens to large bandit gangs as he headed toward the lands the Hainer clan controlled. But Zack was like a moving calamity, essentially fulfilling the Hainer prophecy whether he liked it or not. All obstacles were destroyed in the quickest manner, as Zack had no time to spare. Most opposing forces were destroyed with utter prejudice, apart from a few unlucky souls whom Zack caught and dragged along to question on the move. However, he suddenly stopped in his tracks just as he was about to enter the domain of the Hainer. An old troll, wearing a voluminous robe with a star pattern, stood in the middle of the road, and from the looks of it, he was waiting for Zack. The old man seemed to be blind, judging by his milky white eyes, yet he stared straight at Zack like he was peering into his soul.
"Catching a glimpse of heaven's secrets can be both a blessing and a curse. It told me that the key to my family's survival was stopping you," the man said, and surprisingly enough, there was a kindly smile on his face. "Karma brought us together, but severing karma is heaven's path."
Zack was about to respond, but suddenly he found himself without any ground to stand on, as an enormous sinkhole hundreds of meters across swallowed them both up, causing them to barrel into the abyss. Chapter 33. Pawn of Fate. Zack's heart hammered with horror as he plunged further and further into the abyss. He tried to find something to hold on to, but he found himself pelted by one rock after another, as massive boulders detached from the walls and slammed into him with the force of a speeding truck. There was no way this wasn't the work of the old Hainer patriarch. He did, however, notice that the old man had fallen inside as well, and he was some ways above him. But his situation didn't seem nearly as bad. The old seer was sitting on a piece of land as he sailed toward the bottom as well, but not a single boulder hit him or even came close. Zack glowered in anger at the man who had caused this mess and quickly charged up a chop. However, a second after he launched the strike at the old man, a massive boulder slammed into the fractal blade, resulting in mutual destruction. Zack was about to charge up another strike, but he was thrown off course by another boulder. Was all this really a coincidence, or was this what it was like to fight against a karmic cultivator? It would take more than some errant rocks to take him out, though, and Zack stopped trying to hit the man and instead focused on the depths below. They had fallen for almost 15 seconds already, but Zack noticed the dive was about to have a very abrupt end, as the ground below was quickly rising to meet them. Zack only had a second to think, and without any better options available, he activated a defensive charge of his robes, along with another talisman, as he infused himself with the Tao of the Coffin. He couldn't actually die or get seriously hurt from just falling in standard gravity, but he didn't want to risk getting knocked out as he suspected the old man had some means to deal with the landing. Zack landed like a comet, causing a massive crater with himself in the epicenter, Zack felt the taste of iron in his mouth, but he ignored the pain and scrambled to his feet to meet the next wave of attacks. A massive boulder had appeared, seemingly out of nowhere, but Zack cut it apart just in time to see the shockwave of his own crash landing buffeting the old man's descent. It actually allowed him to land as smoothly as if he had only jumped down from a small incline, and Zack couldn't help himself from swearing at the scene.
"You are quite adept at resisting karmic manipulations. I am Terrarian Haner, former patriarch of the Haner clan."
The old man smiled when he noticed Zack's glare.
"Why did you do this?"
Zack growled, his anger already building.
"You should have realized that trapping yourself in here with me can't end well for you."
"Even a blind old man can see how powerful you are. My descendants aren't your match, so I nudged events a bit to create this place for us since I learned of your coming," he said. "Of course, nature had already laid the groundwork."
Zack looked around, and he had to say he was pretty shocked by what a karmic cultivator could do. The hole they found themselves in was the biggest one he had ever seen. It was hundreds of meters wide, and its edges were almost completely sheer. The sky was still visible far above, but even he would have some trouble getting back up in short order.
"Do you have the clan-defining treasure on you?"
Zack asked.
"The Star of Arialdar is placed on top of a flying treasure. The flying treasure has also been reinforced with an illusion array and an isolation array, and my descendants have been instructed to keep flying across this vast continent for 23 days before returning."
The man smiled.
23 days?
Zack repeated with an even stare.
"Indeed. The star is the core of our heritage. We cannot lose it. We sacrificed much to glean a path out of this calamity. The longer it is hidden, the better. And after 23 days, the treasure will be safe. You might still be able to find the treasure if fate is on your side. But are you in a position to worry about that?"
A surge of anger flashed in Zack's mind as the pieces of oblivion seemed energized. But Zack quickly calmed down as he tried to understand the situation. The Haner clan was obviously the real deal, since they had indirectly inferred the rules of the tower, even if they didn't know about its existence. 23 days was how much time remained of his climb. The treasure would be safe in 23 days, as he would have been thrown out of the tower by then. But Zack suddenly froze when he realized what the old man had said.
"What do you mean, position to worry?"
Zack frowned.
"A celestial stone will fall into this hole in a short while,"
the old man said, some ruthlessness finally shining through his congenial facade.
"A celestial stone?"
Zack muttered with confusion, until his eyes widened in alarm.
"A goddamn meteor?"
"My clan worked for 1,000 years to form a karmic link with one of the stones sailing about in the vast beyond, gently nudging it closer to us. It became our clan's guardian and judgment. And when better to use it than now?"
These people were lunatics. That was the only thing Zack could think of as he looked at the old man with an aghast expression. Dragging a meteor down on top of his own head to take out a threat to his clan was beyond overkill. Even if his mission succeeded, he would have destroyed half his country from the impact, along with getting himself killed. Zack also knew that there was no way that the old man would let him climb out of the hole in peace. He could only take him out as quickly as possible and pray that he was the level guardian. A storm of energy exploded around him as he activated Hatchet Man's rage, and it almost looked like a sea of flames was conjured by his wrath. He hadn't used the skill too often, since he was worried that the mental effect of the skill would synergize with the anger that the splinter was always fanning in the background, But now was not the time to care about such things. A towering power made him feel flush with potential, and he almost welcomed the descent of the meteor to test his mettle against it. However, he quickly snapped out of it, and instead focused his attention on the old man. Each upgrade of the skill had prolonged the effect of the boost by 10 full seconds, so he still had less than a minute to finish the fight before he would enter a weakened state. However, that should be more than enough to settle the fight. Zack shot toward the old man as he shot out 5 fractal blades in an instant, with a 6th starting to whirl around him like a buzzsaw. The air screamed from the power in the blades, as they contained the highest power Zack could muster. However, it almost looked like the old man was a hologram, as he flickered the moment the attacks were supposed to hit him. The fractal blades passed right through and crashed into the sheer wall behind the old man, causing massive scars in the rock that ran for dozens of meters. Zack didn't exactly understand how the old man had dodged without moving, but he guessed he was messing with fate somehow. But Zack still rushed forward, confident that there had to be some limits to what the man could avoid. However, the ground suddenly crumbled beneath his feet just as he was about to attack the Hainer Patriarch, which completely robbed him of his momentum and made him slam into the ground. A crystalline staff appeared in the Hainer Patriarch's hands just as Zack was about to get back on his feet, and Zack summoned a storm of leaves to protect himself from whatever strike was coming. A shudder in the air lifted Zack from his feet and threw him dozens of meters away. However, his danger sense hadn't warned him of anything, and as far as he could tell, the attack hadn't harmed him in the slightest. He felt some disorientation for a second, but he regained his wits after shaking his head, and soon enough he was back on his feet. The old man had conjured a massive avatar behind him by this point, a shimmering priest holding a large crystal toward the heavens. Reality suddenly shifted, and Zack saw dozens of versions of himself split off from his body. A few rushed toward the old man, whereas the others started channeling cosmic energy into his arm. There were even 2 massive spectral axes from deforestation that appeared in the sky. His mind was a confused jumble as competing ideas and impressions clamored for supremacy, and he felt his cosmic and mental energies rapidly drain into the different versions of himself. Zack suddenly roared at the top of his lungs as he stomped on the ground with enough force to cause cracks to spread over 10 meters in each direction. 5 explosions followed in quick succession as Zack pushed toward his target. It felt like he was forced to push through solid matter to advance, and it was as though his mind was being dragged toward the other incarnations of himself. But it wasn't enough to stop him, and Zack was soon upon the old man again. Verun's bite fell, its sanguine glow illuminating the surroundings. Zack stood panting to restrain his rage as he looked down on the old man on the ground. A massive wound ran from his shoulder down to his navel, and he was almost split in two by Zack's strike. He looked down at the troll with some confusion, as he hadn't actually expected his strike to hit that easily. The idea had been to push him a bit further to expend his defensive treasures, after which he would finish him with nature's punishment. But perhaps he had overestimated the old man.
"Ow!"
the ancient troll coughed with confusion in his eyes as he was bleeding out on the ground.
"Why are you immune to the pull of fate?"
Zack wasn't completely sure what the old man was talking about. The weird illusion he had been put under was pretty annoying, but it could barely be considered a nuisance due to draining his energy. Was it supposed to do something more? Perhaps he had his almost inhuman pool of luck to thank for avoiding any serious harm. Karmic warriors seemed to fight by slightly augmenting causality and fate in their favor, but Zack had a huge amount of luck that did the same thing. The special attribute might be the best way of countering these kinds of people. The battle was over as the man lay dying on the ground, and Zack could breathe out in relief when he saw that a teleportation array had appeared a few meters away. Killing the Guardians was never a requirement, unless it was stated in the quest. Defeating them was all that was needed. However, most of the battles so far had ended with a fatality, as the Guardians were seldom good people. The battle hadn't been too exhaustive, and he was completely unscathed. However, he still wasn't too elated with the results. Normally, he would have stayed on the floor an hour at the least to recover from his weakened state and calm his mind, but he knew that wasn't an option this time. A massive ball of fire had appeared in the sky by now, and Zack knew he would have to leave within a minute.
"Why did you go this far?"
Zack asked as he looked down on the old man.
"You should have seen that I didn't really want your life."
"Sometimes drastic measures are needed to push fate in the direction one desires, War Master,"
the old troll coughed.
"Or should I say, Trial Taker?"
"You know?"
Zack said with surprise.
"Even the heavens aren't perfect. Fragments and pieces slip through,"
the old man wheezed.
"However, that knowledge is what led you to our doorstep. I peered too deep, and I cannot be allowed to live. At least my family is ignorant of the truth, and the calamity will hopefully end through my death and your disappearance."
Zack looked at the old man for a few seconds, but he had no idea what to say. What could one say in a situation like this? It might be true that he was being used as a real hatchet man by the system, taking out those in its net who had learned too much.
"I'm sorry things ended this way,"
Zack sighed, and started to walk toward the teleportation array.
"Freedom is an illusion, Trial Taker,"
the old seer coughed as Zack stepped onto the platform.
"Are you any freer than us?"
Zack took one last look at the old troll. The seer's face had turned into a grotesque mask of anger and irreconciliation as the blank eyes stared up at the sky. Zack wasn't sure if he was looking at the meteor that was fast approaching or the heavens above.
"I am Terrarian Hainer, and I am more than a pawn."
Chapter 34. Out of Reach. The encounter with the old seer was pretty jarring, but it wouldn't stop Zack from moving. He had his goals, and he knew that one couldn't get anywhere in this world without knocking out the competition. It was not a matter of Agras-induced cynicism, but rather a reality forced onto everyone by the system. If there was no conflict, then one would be created. Hearing the old seer's final words indicated that the worlds he traversed might all be real. But did it really change anything? He could only shrug off any hesitation and insecurities and head toward the next guardian. Climbing the 8th floor presented a new kind of torture as Zack desperately pushed through the levels. He had almost completely given up on sleep by now. His rest was slightly slowing down while revolving the fragment of the Bodhi to help recuperate his exhausted body and keep the splinter in check. He had realized that the splinter wasn't as intrusive when his mental state was in perfect condition, but problems quickly arose after having expended a lot of mental energy. He almost fell into a rage after every straining battle, and he quickly had to restore his mental energies to not go out of control. By this point, he needed to pretty much constantly travel with a soul crystal in his free hand to stay lucid. The problem was that every time he used his Tao, he felt as though the splinter's corrosion was slightly more ingrained into his soul, for good or bad. It did seem that the Tao he forced into his attacks kept getting stronger, but it came at the cost of his mind getting slowly eroded. Zack could only push back against the effects as he kept climbing. He considered stopping using his Taos altogether until he found a solution, but that would eventually just slightly delay the inevitable. Besides, not using his Taos would effectively end his climb. He couldn't defeat any enemies without them, and he was not ready to stop climbing. His experiences in the tower had completely remolded him, pushing him toward a peak he didn't even know existed. It had resulted in his mind being invaded, but Zack started to believe that his best bet at finding a solution was to keep climbing. The 7th floor rewards were customized for his needs, and perhaps the 8th floor would be even more tailored to his needs. And what did he currently need more than something to control the splinter? He might even find a solution before reaching the 72nd level, as the 8th floor was a veritable treasure trove. It was almost torture to traverse one world after another and hear about shocking treasures that would drive anyone mad, knowing that each of them was just out of his reach. The 65th floor seemed to contain an ancient array left behind by a long-extinct race. It would be able to awaken one's hidden potential, which, according to rumors, meant gaining a huge surge of attributes and perhaps even awakening a constitution. But it was locked behind the floor's quest, and Zack simply couldn't complete it, so he could only take out his frustrations on the Guardian before moving on. The next floor contained what Zack guessed was a top-tier E-grade Axe Spirit tool, but it was in the hands of a peak E-grade warlord. This one wasn't quite as alluring as the previous floor, but it would still be a huge boon to have an alternative to Varun's bite. This was especially true, as it was rumored to have a corrosive attunement, making it an extremely good weapon of choice for his Draugr form. Zack initially thought that he was doomed to not get his hands on it, but news spread that the warlord had suddenly died just as Zack was about to finish things up on the floor. He couldn't join the fight for the warlord's hoard, though, as he was running out of time. He could only grit his teeth and move on to the next floor, leaving the treasures behind. It almost felt like the system kept throwing out more and more alluring baits in his path in an effort to stop him from climbing any further. It was to the point that Zack wondered if it was some sort of trial that tested his determination, and Zack staunchly kept his eyes on the prize as he kept moving toward the next levels. Missing out on all the treasures was a big disappointment, but he did make some startling progress with his experiments. Zack had almost reached a 40% success rate in forming the bronze flashes since getting to the 8th floor. He still needed to use his crude method of stabbing himself in the shoulders, but with the help